I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, welcome to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast. It's Robin, Mark, myself, Matt, talking Bills news with a UK twist. And it's 2-0 in the three-week AFC trilogy as we eventually beat the Jets. So, initial thoughts, guys. Initial thoughts on the game. Relieved, were you nervous during it? Relieved.
It was a mixture of bored and restless, but ultimately we got the win. And if mine serves, that's four wins in a row, 2-2 in the division. We win the last four games with the number one seed. That's the highlight.
I never thought we were going to lose.
No.
At any point did I feel like we were in danger, even at 7-7, even when we were struggling to get much going in the first half. There was just something about it. Like, I felt like we had more gears to go, and I felt like we were comfortably keeping the Jets' offense at bay. That was two very, very good Ds playing, playing together. And in the most part, I think like the defense is one. But I always felt that if we needed to, we seem to be doing it quite a lot at the moment. We're getting scores at the end of first halves, where in first halves where we're not playing particularly brilliantly, but we're finding ways to get touchdowns right at the end of the first half. Did it again with Dawson Knox today. And although it just feels like it felt comfortable, or not spectacular again, but comfortable enough.
Yeah, I think the good thing about this is that we can obviously we'll talk about it more in depth on the preview show. Is that we go into Saturday night, Sunday morning, not under huge amount of pressure when we face the Dolphins, knowing we've got that 2-game lead, and effectively anything more than a 1-score win seals the AFC East for us.
Yeah.
So that's the one good thing. I mean, for me, I think that first half, I was there just thinking, this is not going to, I will admit, it was not going to be our day. The fact that we keep starting slow compared to, up to the bye week, we were out on the blocks fast, but this time we were just going so slow. And I think this is the most times that Sam Martin had to actually do work in all 14 games.
Yeah, he did. Well, 10 punts in a row, wasn't it? Five punts each. Excellent punt coverage. I mean, I'm sounding like Josh Allen at the press conference talking about complementary football and all three phases and that sort of thing. But yeah, to echo what Mark said, we didn't look like we were ever going to lose. And this is a team that, well, they're now 7-6. And they're a decent team, very, very good defense. They're a little short up front. Matt Milano did his best to take out another quarterback, and we all hope that he's okay. All kidding aside, but all's fair in love and hits. And they're a decent team. They've had some good wins, and we never looked like losing. Even at 29 and 20-12, it was. We were comfortable. We're doing just enough to win, and putting the most positive spin on it. Isn't that what good teams do? They win with the run game. We didn't do much in the run, but we had more in the run last week. This time we played good defense and picked out two decent drives when we could.
I think that you can't underestimate the impact the elements play in this game as well, especially in the first half where teams are getting used to it. It doesn't look like much on TV, but the conditions, whenever it goes to a close-up shot, it's blustery, it's windy, it's sleet, it's obviously bitterly cold. That's hard to play free-flowing, offensive, attacking, good-to-watch football in.
Yeah.
The fact that we managed to get a couple of plays that we did get is testament to how good Josh is, how good some of those receivers are, and the play catching that they can make. But it almost like is what it was. It felt like it was conditions where it was one of those kind of like grind out a win days and don't really matter how you do it, especially when it's a divisional opponent. As we said on the preview show, it would be nice to be flashy and be that swashbuckling offense. Elements kind of meant that you couldn't here, but to still get 20 points, probably could have had a few more. It was more than enough with the way our defense played.
Yeah, and good teams find ways to win. And obviously that's shown in the last few games, especially when it's gone down to the last 2 minutes of a game. The only nitpick I have is that I don't know about you guys, but once we went 27 up, and then obviously that block punt for safety on there, and the way the Jets actually did start marching down the field, a part of me actually does get worried and wondering why, and it might become a narrative, it may not, why we can't close out games or even go for the kill. Because I think after we got the ball back, after we had done the free punt, they went three and out. What was it? It was twice incomplete passes and then a short run, and we just punted the ball straight back. I mean, is it play calling?
The first pass was a drop in my mind. That was kind of a run pass option where the pass is available to Allen, but only if he is 100% sure he's going to make it. And he put it on the money and the receiver just dropped it. That for me is you can't really call that on play calling, because Josh would have kept it and probably picked up 3 or 4 or 5 yards and you run the time off the clock. I get it that it's not the most sensible play call if you're just going to go with the design run, but I mean, our strength is in our passing game. So I can sort of understand it. And that was a drop, and we continue to have them. There's a few guys that I'm getting to the point where I'm like, I'm kind of done with them now on both sides of the ball. And they're proving week on week, regardless of what they've done previously and regardless of how much they might be like, you know, liked by the fans, they're consistently not doing it now. And too many drops, too many penalties, too many blown coverages. There's a few things that were issues, and we're lucky that our defense stepped up enough, and our front seven especially stepped up enough to mean that it didn't hurt us in this one. And it never looked like it was going to hurt us in this one.
Yeah, we all like Isaiah McKenzie as a person, doesn't he?
He's one of them. He's one of them, Robin.
yeah. He seems like a fun guy to have around, but I think I counted at least three that weren't, you know, catchable. If it's whoever it was who said it first, if it touches your fingers, it's on you to catch it. You know, they pay these guys millions of dollars, and he's just not doing it at a consistent level. And this is not game on game. This is almost year on year now. He'll have one good game. Seems to always play well against the Patriots, but he's just got too many drops. And there's been a lot of ire, anger directed towards Ken Dorsey, suggesting that he's out of his depth, he doesn't know how to call it. But you add those five drops as catches back in, stat sheet looks a damn sight better. You're possibly looking at, Josh, I think I underthrew Diggs, which would have been a huge play, could have even got a touchdown with it. Then you're suddenly looking at 27 or 30 points. Game doesn't look quite so bad. You can't win as well when it comes to, and to answer your point, Matt, about seeing games off. Well, the conservative thing to do is run the ball up the middle three times, kill 5 or 6 seconds, plus another 40, or make them take the time out. But Josh Allen near the end saw a really good pass to Knox, which may well have gone for a touchdown, or may at the very least have got 20 or 30. And that you're almost icing the game at that point, aren't you, with one first down, making them stop the clock. But if you run it three times, people say you're being too conservative, but he's gone for it and it's an incomplete pass. You can't win either way, can you?
That's the play I'm referring to. That's the one where he's decided to make that pass, and it was right on the money for Dawson Knox. He's got to bring that in.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
That was the right thing to do.
Don't get me wrong. I say, well, once he closes out, obviously, if there's like 7 minutes or so left in the game, obviously I don't expect to take the whole 7 minutes up a run, but at least be a bit more smarter, maybe have a run first, maybe then have your option depending on what yards you get on your first, rather than actually throw that incompletion on that, even if I'm calling a drop an incompletion, regardless of what, or not. Having that on there already puts you second and 10. And then if you do go for a design run there and get 1 yard, you're still looking at a third and long situation. And going on to carry on with play calling, I after every game, I go through, obviously, Twitter, all these experts and analysts and all that, just to see what could go wrong. But the Jets ranked 24th in, I can never remember what DVOA is.
Yeah.
When receivers are targeted up the middle. In the two games against the Jets this year, we've had 3 passes that actually went up the middle. 3 passes that actually just went up the middle, which all of them were towards the sidelines. And the Jets are stronger on the outside than the inside. And when they play that wide nine that we saw quite a few decent runs for from the thing, you would kind of think, is this what we're missing when we have Cole Beasley? Because you've got that wide nine and you've got that big gap in the middle. And the beginning of the season, Josh Allen was mixing and matching. He was throwing a lot more middle to outside. But more and more recently, he's been, whether it be a case that they were chasing the games and all that, the fact that after the bye week, he was starting more and more towards the sideline. So that's kind of where I'm seeing play calling going.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, actually. I do feel like we lack a slot receiver right now, big time, that can actually, you know, like, catch the ball consistently. I feel like two of our main starting receivers at the moment are around about 50% when targeted, which isn't good enough. Diggs is a lot higher. Gabe Davis and Isaiah McKenzie are way down on where they should be. I think you're right. If you look at where the passes are going the majority of the time, we do leave big gaps in the middle of the pitch that we don't exploit. And especially, like you said, if that's where the Jets are weakest, why are we not scheming to take advantage of that?
Yeah, there's a gap there, isn't there? Like, I always want to give the rookies a pass, but is it surely time for Shakir to be given a bit more of a run out, because he seems to be limited. He still seems to be behind McKenzie. I'm keeping an eye if Jameson Crowder can come back before the end of the season. He was sort of 6 to 8 weeks at the time. You sort of hope he might come back for the last couple of games as well. That might give them an added benefit. But I guess if they're thinking CJ Mosley's their decent corner, and Gardner, are they the ones covering the middle of the field? Are they trying to stay away from him?
Yeah, I think you just might have to put that down to the inexperience of Ken Dorsey. Don't get me wrong, he will become a good coordinator. There were a few plays on there which you didn't think they'd pull it out, or they didn't. Or they
well, just well, well, right one with Knox in the centre, I get the feeling that was probably his idea.
I think they just need a few more of the offensive analyst guys to actually be in his ears a little bit and say, look, the stats say this, that can game plan the correct way. Because that's the one thing that I'm worried about, the slow starts and then the start to become more predictable in the throws and the plays that we do really make opposition defenses catch on and make that adjustment quickly, that we then have to adjust ourselves on offense and go away from the game we like to play.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think predictable's exactly the word. We've gone a little bit easier to play against. I don't think Josh is playing quite as well as he was earlier on in the season. The receivers aren't getting as open. we have gone away a little bit, and I know that we scream about wanting this balance within the run game, but I do think we've gone away quite a lot from what made us that team. And whether that is Josh Allen injury dependent or based on what's happening with the receivers and their form, offensive line certainly isn't helping, is not playing well at all at the moment, and has been an Achilles heel for us for the last month or so. The Jets D-line, much as our D-line had its way with their offensive line, their D-line battered our offensive line for a lot of this game. So many holding penalties, so many silly mistakes, so many big plays called back because we couldn't contain them. I do think we've got easier offensively to play against, and whether that's we've gone a little bit more conservative after we had that little mid-season wobble, where we've tried to balance it out with the run game a little bit more, which isn't a bad thing, but I think sometimes you just got to let Josh Allen cook. I don't think we are as much at the moment.
I mean,
yeah, it is a bit of a worry on the O-line, isn't it? Because I know we were all grateful that we got Deion Dawkins back, but I think he got flagged personally, I think, three times, didn't he?
At least, yeah.
For holding. Ryan Bates left the game. He's going to be a doubt for Miami. Hopefully, the last thing I read wasn't maybe too much more than that, like one game, maybe two, not three or four. But Spencer Brown's still getting...
He's not playing well, Spencer Brown, at all, considering he was the guy last year that when he came in was almost Mr. Reliable on the O-line. He's not having a good second half of the season at all.
Yeah. So Bates is out. Saffold, as far as I can see, has been fine, but not great. I think you've got to think about a new guard for... in the draft, Christmas this as well, but it's a fairly average at best line, isn't it? It's not brilliant. It's always been okay.
This is what I've found. Obviously, again, going through Twitter, a list of the team, every team's most frequent O-line combination this year, and 43% of all our plays are. Our most frequent O-line combination is Dawkins, Saffold, Morse, Bates and Brown. Now, yards per play, this is kind of interesting. They lead the league out the most frequent O-line combinations with 7.11 yards per play. And they've only used that combination for 43% of time. Cincinnati used the same five for 95% of all their plays, only gained 5.56 yards per play. And Pittsburgh, the same, have 93% of the time using the same five and only got 4.89. So
Is that mostly down to injury?
It's possible. It's mainly down to injury, the fact that we have only been able to use for only 43% of the time that five. Yeah. And the cohesion's not there. But on the flip side, there is good about it. It's one of those ifs and ups and maybes, because we know we're going to face another strong defense this week against Miami. Obviously, Jets are actually a very good defense. They're most very underrated defense. But
I think they're pretty rated now.
Yeah,
I think people know how good that defense is these days.
But I agree, there needs to be investment in that offensive line, because we can spring with a good play Cook and Singletary for a decent amount. Not saying it's a home run hitting, but we know Singletary and especially Cook can get those 10, 15 yards on occasions per run, but it's just trying to now keep Allen healthy. And maybe it is a case that injuries over time have played, so they've not been that cohesive compared to others. But it's one of those things that we need to address straight away, and hopefully Cromer can work his magic.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a difference, isn't it? 43-something% of your favoured, almost common starting offensive line compared to 95, which is 100%, isn't it? Give or take, that's an incredibly healthy O-line that they've got there.
And an O-line isn't a position, in my mind, that, you know, it's not like other things, especially on defense, that you're trying to rotate all the time. That is someone that you want to play your offensive line every snap if you have the chance to, because that's all about chemistry and relationships and bond with the quarterback. You don't want to be mixing and matching. I think a lot of that is down to injuries. Deion Dawkins, Mitch Morse have both had extended periods out. Ryan Bates, obviously, now in this game. Yeah, it doesn't help, certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, you could tell in this game, because their defensive line, especially Quinn and Williams before he went out, they had their way with us, really.
Yeah. And let's move on to defense. And the one thing that really surprised me is that there was, let me get a look at the stats, 3, 6, 7 players that played all 74 snaps.
Mm.
Tremaine Edmonds, Jordan Poyer, Damar Hamlin, Matt Milano, and Jackson, White, and Johnson. We only ever used 3 cornerbacks that whole game.
Mm.
And one of them blows my mind, frankly.
Yeah.
Because the second half, everything that the Jets did offensively that was good was when they targeted Dane Jackson.
Especially on those certain lines.
Yeah, he's like, we need a go-to play. Who's Dane Jackson guarding? Throw the ball to him. The guy, for some reason, he made one big play that I can remember on 2nd and 10 on their final drive where they went four and out. Other than that, I don't understand what's gone on with Kyrie Elam, that he's like, after he looked strong in the first half of the season, what he's done to drop down the pecking order. Because was he not completely inactive, a healthy scratch last week?
Yeah.
And this week he's back in, but not playing much, if at all.
I think he had a few special team snaps, and that was pretty much it. And this is kind of my thinking. You've got a guy who's played well, and what has Dane Jackson got on Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier
to actually keep him in that team?
I mean,
the only thing I'm hanging on to is it that Dane Jackson, and I can't believe I'm saying this, is better or less worse at playing zone, and Kyrie Elam as a rookie is more familiar with playing man-to-man, and that the Bills defense tends to play more zone. And say next week against the Dolphins, there might be more of a man-to-man coverage, try and take out Tyreek Hill and Waddle.
I really hope that's the reason.
Elam may come in for that.
I really hope that's the reason, because if it's on performance, then, I mean, I don't know what game they're watching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think and it wasn't just like, it was so obvious that it was the comment that everyone was making. What's he got to do to be out of the game?
Yeah, I think Elam, he is a great man coverage cornerback. I mean, he does have his moments in zone. I think we had played zone previously, obviously, when White was out, and he did come in and do well. But it's just a head scratcher, and hopefully McDermott and Frazier can come out and actually say why they only used 3 cornerbacks the whole time and why Elam was not one. It's always going to be a head scratcher to me. And just try to think, is it performance? Is it the way that McDermott likes to actually to blend in and merge in their rookies? Because he did it with Epinesa, he did it sort of with Rousseau and so on. They actually just drip feed them in at times and just keep them on that short leash. But you've got a guy who's a first round pick for a reason, being outplayed somehow, whether it be blackmail or not, by a second round pick.
Yeah.
Even an undrafted, when you have Benford in, that's played more snaps this year than Kyrie Elam.
Yeah. What was Dane Jackson's 7th round?
Yeah.
Yeah, it blows. I don't know. I mean, I think you get to a point in the season where you've got to stop drip feeding rookies in, and you've got to go with whoever is the form player at the time.
Mm.
And Dane Jackson is not the form player. And it feels like this isn't the first week we've been talking about it. It was the same against the Vikings. It was the same against the Jets when we played them last time. He gets targeted as being the weak link in the secondary. And it's like we're bringing in someone that makes it easy for opposing offenses to pick up yards on us. How many times do we concede third and long? And I bet you wouldn't be surprised to find out how many of those are targeted towards Dane Jackson. I bet it's a freakishly high number because they know teams have studied it. Like, you know, if we can see it, you're damn sure other offensive coordinators can.
Yeah. But I mean, the one thing we can say about that is obviously Tre'Davious White having the full 100% of the snaps in the game shows that he is pretty much back. Okay, you still saw a bit of rust in some of those plays, but it's good that he's actually, after having 9-12 months off with the ACL, that he's actually starting to get game sharper at the right time. So it shows that their management of injuries and players is something that is good about this this coaching team.
Yeah, they're not having too many repeat injuries, are they? They've done exactly the right thing with Trey White. I'm still keeping my fingers crossed that it may not be too late for Micah Hyde, because I keep seeing him at the side at training practices as well. But yeah, they've absolutely done the right thing with him. I suppose my only other why persevere with Dane Jackson is that they're maybe making a long-term evaluation, in that Elam's going to be around for year two and year three, and do you not want to expose him too soon. You don't want to ruin a player in their rookie season. I think that's an overly cautious approach. If he's good enough to play, then he should. And maybe they were hoping that with Benford and perhaps with one of the others, that they would be good enough to make do until Trey White came back. But no, the fact of the matter is they're not. The other calculus might be, well, we held the Jets to 12 points, and really it was 7 points until the fourth quarter. Blocked a punt, held them to a field goal. Like, yeah, if he's giving up the big plays, is it good enough for that process of developing long-term solutions at the cornerback position sufficient?
I get that when you're playing the Jets, but you can't have someone in there when you're playing the Bengals that is going to say, well, just target that guy. You'll get, you'll get 15 yards in the attempt.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. That will fly when you've got Mike White throwing the ball, or Joe Flacco, for crying out loud, throwing the ball. That won't work when it's, you know, a good team, a good offense with like a Joe Burrow to Jamar Chase-esque attack.
Mm. Yeah. I mean,
and also one quick thing. We're obviously talking about secondary and stuff, but my God, how important is Jordan Poyer and keeping him fit to us? Mm. It's like the difference he makes when he's there. I saw a stat that we're 9-0 when Jordan Poyer starts. We're 1-3 when he's not.
Yeah.
The difference that man makes is like, it's night and day. We've got to do everything we can in our power to keep wrap him up in cotton wool as much as we possibly can, because it's a different team when he's around.
Yeah.
And I think one other thing is we've got to put on there is, are we going to miss Von Miller when we've got Greg Rousseau?
Not if Rousseau keeps playing the way he has been the last couple of games. And again, talking about cotton wool, let's keep Rousseau there as well, because he's only just come back from an injury himself. He was again phenomenal. I mean, it is funny that people talk about Von Miller like he's dead. I mean, he is like by the side. He's going to be on the phone. He's going to be there in a sort of off-field capacity. No, of course, we'd much rather have him on the field. But you just wonder about how much of that experience and wisdom he's passed on, because Russo just looks terrific as a pupil. Of Von Miller, and I think we will miss him, but we can maybe survive to the end of. We can maybe go all the way without him.
Yeah, I mean, you've got guys that are seven sacks this season. There's only one behind Von Miller on there. He's a guy that's been excellent as a run defender,
mm-hmm.
And now starting to actually make havoc in the passing game, and he's only in his second season, and in essence only his third year as a defensive end.
He's serving like 22, 23, isn't he?
Yeah. So he only had 1 year in college, missed a year, and then technically in the second year. Third year of defensive end, and he's starting to become that game changer. Just needs that closing that Von Miller can do, and then we'll have a guy that hopefully can be close to. I don't really like labeling people and actually put tags on someone, but if you continue how he's going and picking off and learning how to close like Von Miller, we could get our modern day Bruce Smith in Russo.
Well, let's hope so.
Well, let's not put too much pressure on him then.
Yeah, no pressure.
That's why I don't like to really put tags on and all that. But
I think it's also worth adding that he's being obviously helped earlier on in the season by the fact that Von Miller was on the other side. That makes a big difference, and he's taken advantage for that, and I think that probably gained a lot of confidence from his performance when Von Miller was there. The interesting thing will be to see if he, as he did in this game, if he can continue that level of performance when he is the focused edge rusher. I also think that he is getting assistance by the level of performance of Ed Oliver at the moment, who I think is as good as I've ever seen Ed Oliver play since he's been a Bill. And I think that his rushing from a more of a tackle position is making a massive difference to our front seven as well.
I think everything is. I mean, Ed Oliver, even Daquan Jones. I mean, he's actually now fast becoming a very important person. And now, obviously, with Jordan Phillips out, obviously Ed Oliver, Jones, they're. Those two took the most snaps. We obviously brought up CJ Brewer, signed him permanently to the 53. He only had 11 snaps, or seven snaps the whole game. So it was a workload on Jones, Oliver, and Settle. And still, they managed to hold that run game in check, the run game that blitzed us. Okay, they had Breece Hall at the time for that one, but blitzed us quite badly in week 9, and we limited them to that. And again, the depth shown with Epinesa and Shaq Lawson making plays, especially Lawson towards the end with that big sack.
Yeah, the front seven again are done, and it's helping us a lot at the moment while we have some struggles in the secondary, especially for the games when Poy is maybe not there. The front seven has really stepped up, and it's making a massive difference at the moment. And they're going to have to again against the Dolphins to be covered later on in the week.
Yeah. And one last thing before we do sign off, we've got to have a word in here for Matt Milano.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I mean, is there anything this guy can't do at the moment other than probably catch a couple of balls? I think during the season, he's had a couple of perfect interceptions gone straight through his hands. But him and those two two hits on Mike White, Ed Oliver with a hit on Mike White. And that's your textbook tackle on there. And I think someone also put a little comparison that in the Miami Chargers game, that that roughing the passer on, what was it? Was it Tua or Herbert, where they just gently tapped him, went down, and it was called roughing the passer, where you saw Matt Milano and Ed Oliver just pretty much spear Mike White into the ground, making him leave the stadium at the end of the game in a hospital, in an ambulance.
Didn't follow through though, did he? Didn't press him with the body weight.
No.
He got in at just the right time. It was, you know, it was perfectly timed. You know, rolled away. Nothing personal, just business. I also think that with Tremaine Edmonds on the field at the same time, their coupling is greater than the sum of their parts. As well, I think when both of them are on the field at the same time, then they both tend to excel because they both zip around doing slightly different things. But yeah, we need both of those guys fit, and obviously extend Tremaine if we possibly can.
Yeah. So, is there anything you guys want to say last words before we sign off?
Two quick things for me. One, let's get in some tackling practice this week. If we can put Damar Hamlin, who missed five tackles in the game against the Jets, if we can get him on to learn how to make a tackle, that'd be pretty cool. Maybe Matt Milano can give him a crash course in how to do it. That would be pretty cool. And also, is we never really talk about him, but I wanted to make a point of just how consistently brilliant Tyler Bass is. We never cover the kicker. But to be able to perform the way that he does, especially in the conditions that there were at the weekend, you take a kicker that's just consistently brilliant really for granted. And there's not, if you think about it, there's very few teams in the league that have got that kicker that, you know, if you've got like a 40 to 50 yard, almost 40 to 55 yard kick, regardless of the conditions, regardless of the stadium, regardless of the wind, chances are he's going to knock it through. And I wouldn't swap Tyler Bass for anybody at the moment. And I'm delighted that he's on our team. And thank God we found a kicker that we can rely on, that's got a decent leg, is consistently accurate. And that, especially when you get to playoff football, considering a lot of the games that we're winning at the moment, you know, aren't by a huge amount of points, the field goals that he's putting up, the extra points he's putting up, and I know he missed one a couple of weeks ago, but they make a massive difference to us. And I can't remember who it was we played where he scored like five or six field goals. It might have been the Packers. I can't remember. But there was one game where he got where he scored an awful lot, and he makes a massive difference to us. So yeah, shout out to the man Bass.
I think it was the Browns, but I could be wrong.
You might well be right.
Yeah. I mean, on that unsung hero, I thought Sam Martin did some excellent punting. You obviously, Bills had the reputation of not being punters, five in a row that were very good with good punt coverage as well. My only sign off would be, a year ago the Bills were 7-6 and we were losing close games. We're 10-3 and we've won three of those close games, and yet to talk to Bills fans or to hear from Bills fans, it is like they don't know how lucky they are that we've got it. People summarize or use concision to get to the Bills season being 13 seconds against the Chiefs when we were 7-6 and quite desperately needed to win those last four games just to even have a shot at being in the postseason. And then look what we went on to do. We're 10-3, we're four wins away. I still maintain we're a better team than we were last year, and we're triumphing over all kinds of adversity, and this is what championship winning teams do.
My final word is, it's got to be just on Josh Allen, not just for the hurdle and the barrel roll.
Oh yeah,
for the first down in that game, and you can't teach that anymore.
You wouldn't want it, but here we are.
Dawson Knox coming close with the cartwheel touchdown.
Oh, I thought that was better. The fact that he, like, if you look at the still, there's one guy who's tackling midair from presumably where he was meant to be. But the fact that when he's upside down, the ball's a yard shy of the goal line, and yet he manages to pirouette and land so that it's on. It's just incredible.
Yeah. And not only that with Josh Allen, the fact that he's the first quarterback in NFL history to have 6+ rushing touchdowns in 5 consecutive seasons.
Wow.
And also, he's actually he's second in NFL history with the most pass and rush touchdowns in the first 5 seasons in NFL history. With 164.
How far is it behind Dan Marino? Because Dan Marino's got the record, hasn't he?
He is 7.
7 behind.
7 behind.
Are we counting that as a 16-game season, which Marino
I would think have done? So, yes. I think it will be. I mean,
so if we counted last season, he'll have to get it in 2 games from the end then, if they're counting 17 games last season. Okay.
So the Dolphins and the Bears game are the 2 games they need to score at least 8 touchdowns to have the record outright from a 16 game. But you can see him easily breaking that this season, even just in the regular season. But third on that list is Cam Newton with 160. And then in 4th place is Patrick Mahomes, 159.
I've always thought but Mahomes was rubbish.
Yeah.
Really, really.
Threw 3 picks yesterday against the Broncos, but I was probably getting a bit careless.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was fine. I enjoyed watching that just to see Mahomes. But then again, he's not got much hate for throwing those picks like Josh Allen does on there. But also to see Brady actually just get mugged by Mr. Irrelevant.
Yeah.
and obviously the Dolphins losing to the Chargers with Tua apparently the new MVP favorite actually just blowing out in that game, making it an interesting Sunday to say the least. But all we can say is we'll preview the Dolphins game in the next show. But you know all of our socials by now, so give us a follow, like, and for Robin, Mark, myself, Matt, it's good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for listening, and let's go Buffalo Bills.
Go Bills.
You don't know anything about heart? You know anything about work?
No. Huh? That's who we are.
Bills on 3, 1, 2, 3,